Welcome to the Dev House podcast, your window into the metaverse. I am Jim Welch, your host. I'm here with Christian Black today, your co-host. Hey, Christian.
Hello there.
So, you know, today we brought Christian on because we're going to be talking game design, and he's our resident designer in-house, also does programming and a bunch of other tasks as needed, of course.
I wear a lot of hats.
Yes. Yeah. Any sort of small to medium size agency, I think, can kind of relate to that. We also are going to have Austin Grossman on today, and so we'll be introducing him shortly here. But first, let's go ahead and dive into the news. All right. So the news we are talking about today, I'm sure everyone who is kind of aware of the world is kind of aware of NFTs. Those are becoming a very financially interesting space. People are spending a lot of money on these things. But what's kind of interesting today is Ubisoft announced that they are going to start playing in the NFT game. So specifically, the NFTs are going to be given away, I believe. They're not for purchase initially. And so, you know, I think they're kind of trying to be careful because there is a lot of negative, I think, connotations and energy, especially in the game industry about crypto and NFTs. So it's kind of like, how can we kind of explore this, you know, without alienating too many people?
Yeah. From what I've seen, they are keeping it pretty similar to microtransactions, but as a testing the waters, they're just giving it out for free.
And then it's powered by Tezos, which I don't know a lot about, but I was chatting with Eric a bit earlier, and he was saying that they're a little bit more environmentally conscious. So a lot of coins are pretty expensive to the environment, leaves a big footprint to mine. And so, you know, that's something that we as people in this space need to be considering and thinking about as we kind of are trying to be responsible with this new technology. You know, we internally have talked about some NFT stuff and we're exploring some spaces, but it's cool to see, you know, Ubisoft is not some like indie darling game. So it's not like they're a studio that we can look to as like a pinnacle of like, oh, they're in it for the love and not for the business, but they're not as, I guess, notoriously sort of CEO gross as some other studios, right? Yeah. I know Blizzard's sort of the villain right now with some stuff that's happening.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and so I think if Blizzard announced this, that would just be a fuel to the fire of like, oh, anything that Blizzard does, let's add on to that because it's some bad stuff going on over there. But hopefully they can get that kind of fixed up. And it's a challenge for these larger studios, I think, for it's like, how do you grow as a business without alienating kind of the creative folks and the people that love your products and do it in a responsible way? So yeah, we'll see how these come, how people respond to this. But I'm hoping for hopefully positive response, you know, and it goes well and it's done properly. So cool. Well, let's jump into Dev Abomination. So today's abomination kind of segue into that. I mentioned we're working on some NFT stuff, so you can't tell by looking at our, Mega Kid, or Omni Child, as we like to call this. But basically, this is a thing that often happens early in our prototyping where we have maybe like we'll use Cinti Assets a lot of the times, which is a third party development studio. They'll make a bunch of 3D models and they'll do something where they put the skeleton for like 10 different avatars. So you have like 10 different kids and all share the same skeleton. You drop it into something like Mixamoto Animate and you get like this culmination of all of the things into one. And it can be kind of fun. Now, this particular one isn't that same scenario. This image that we're looking at has a bunch of kids just slammed into each other because we're trying to build basically digital figurines and they just happen to all be on the same origin and makes kind of a cool blob of person. So what do you think, Christian? Should we create this one? Is this a 3D printable?
I think this is the rarest one.
Yeah. So there's one of these and it comes in foil.
it's the holographic edition.
Yeah. We'll dip it in like aluminum dip it or something. Yeah. But yeah, so we're going to be working on this and we'll talk more about that on some show where it's a little bit more like finalized and we can show some pretty pictures of it. But yeah, that's our abomination for today. Let's talk about some gear. So the gear we're going to talk about today, this specific exact thing, I actually don't know too much about, but it made me think of all of these similar peripherals that I have experienced, and it's sort of a leaping off point. So the Hobo Loco is basically just a peripheral to help you move without mouse and keyboard and kind of traditional controller. It kind of uses your feet to sort of move about the space. I've seen a number of these. Have you tried any of these type of peripherals before?
Like a treadmill?
Yeah, or a treadmill would be like that.
No, I've never tried anything fancier than just the Vive.
Yeah. I mean, I was at Exxon briefly, and when I was working there on their VR team, they had one of those like things that wraps around your waist that you walk on. And it's weird, in your head, you think maybe it's like a cool like treadmill, but really, at least the one that I use, it was just a slippery sort of concave like dip. And then you put on these like slippery little almost like medical shoe things, and then it makes your feet slide. So really all you're doing is you're just like, you can't get traction, and then that gives you the motion.
I feel like I'd want the traction from a traditional treadmill,
right,
than sliding around.
And I think there are some of those, and I think those are probably a lot more expensive and more rare, because to get an omnidirectional treadmill is probably pretty complicated from an engineering standpoint. But so I've tried that one. I had a friend try another one of these kind of foot control experiences, and he said he just hated the thing. But I'm looking at this one now. It's a hoverboard without wheels. It sits in front of the user on the floor. Unique scheme of navigation control requires a little effort to move the avatar. The challenge is just, does it feel good? And you never kind of know until you try it. And you can't try it until you buy it in most cases. Yep. So, and then the game has to support it. I don't know if they have some kind of interesting drivers to where it's like, oh, it's just like a D-pad or something.
I would hope it just outputs a vector 2,
right,
based on like what it's reading as a foot input.
That's smart. Yeah, I mean, to put something out like this, that's probably a good point. You really just have to have it give data that most games can interpret. Scroll down a little bit on the screen here. I want to see what that next... there's some of their prototype stuff. That's interesting. So they have some patents.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's leaning like the actual hoverboard.
Yeah, right. Which, those things terrify me. I feel like I'd kill myself.
I don't like them, and I spend my free time on skateboards.
Okay. And I imagine that's probably pretty different from a skateboard, because on a skateboard, you're like on the side.
It's
right?
So uncomfortable being shoulders straight while you're going forward, and then having to lean forward, stop, like... Everything that I've learned from like skating or snowboarding says it's wrong.
Don't do that. Yeah. I've never had the nerve to step on, because you see some of those videos where people step on and then they'll immediately like eat it because they'll lean a little too much. Yep. Yeah, it's interesting. Well, yeah. Well, that is our I almost said dev abomination, but it might be great. I don't want to say it's an abomination, but there hasn't been a lot in this space that has worked well from my personal experience. It's either too expensive or too bulky or too much of a unitasker. Like, oh, for this one game, it feels pretty good. Everything else, it's useless.
What's difficult about these things is that you have to prototype them, and you can't do that without actually building it. So like a lot of effort has to go into these kind of products for them to be good in the first place.
Yeah. But I think there is a space for it. I mean, haptics are really important. You know, we did the glove. We talked about the glove recently that Meta is building. And it has like these little kind of air pressurized things, and you can feel things. And I'm excited about that. Maybe because it's just novel and I haven't seen anyone do that well yet. But something about, you know, locomotion in VR is really challenging, and someone needs to solve it. I think, you know, it doesn't feel great to teleport. You get nauseous when you're just sliding around the space. So I hope one of these works out and someone's like, yeah, we use it and it's amazing. And then it kind of can proliferate as part of like, it comes with your Quest, you know, you buy a Quest 2 and it comes with this thing that, you know, or at least is sponsored by that company. Yeah. So that was our news, not our abomination. But now we want to jump into our main segment. Like I said, today we have Austin Grossman, and he was so kind to spend some time joining us today. Hey, Austin, how's it going?
Hey, it's going good.
Awesome. Well, I want you to introduce yourself. Tell everyone about how cool you are. You've worked at some cool studios. You've worked on some cool games. You're working on something that's very tech forward right now. So, and we're going to dive into those. But give people a glimpse into kind of who you are and what you do.
Right. Well, like a lot of people in the, emerging XR, et cetera space. I have a, you know, I have a bunch of different backgrounds. I worked in game design in the 90s and 2000s principally, doing kind of long form narrative immersive sims, like basically, you know, long form action adventure, but incorporating a lot of simulation-y emergent narrative and gameplay. I started with System Shock, Deus Ex, Dishonored, some of the games. Then I went on to be director of game design and story at Magic Leap, the mixed reality hardware company. Somewhere in all of this, I got a master's in theater, most of a doctorate in English literature. I've written a bunch of novels. Anyway, right now I'm dividing my time between literary stuff and my co-founder of QXR Studios, which is a small studio that does narrative and story worlds in some different media. AR, we have a lot of expertise in AR, so we're going there right now. We just launched Metropolis Origins, which is an online NFT collectible card game. That is a lot of stuff in a short space.
That's awesome. Yeah, yeah. Super. And what interests me too, and I'll is sort of your split of focus between kind of more traditional, you know, writing novels and as a writer versus interactive narrative design. And I guess a question right off the bat I have is like, how do you, I mean, it's not a fair question to ask if you have a favorite maybe, but how do you get different things out of those? Like, do you feel like each one fulfills a different part of you creatively, or how do you feel about those two spaces?
That's a very good question. The first, you know, writing and publication I did was in video games, and it did a good job of fracturing traditional storytelling for me. And ever since then, I've been unable to tell a proper story in chronological order. It always jumps around. It taught me to be very spare with language, because, of course, nobody wants to read too much in video games. You know, they just want to click through the dialogue. And the first time you start clicking through your own dialogue because you're already sick of it, yeah, you realize that you using too much language is a luxury, and it teaches you a little bit of humility. The biggest way it fulfills different things is that doing a novel, you have total control, and you're doing it by yourself. Doing games, you're building stuff collaboratively, not just with your coworkers, but with the player, the person on the other end. Mm-hmm. You're kind of collaborative storyteller with whoever's playing your game and working with the system you've designed. So they are very different and complementary, which is good because I get bored very easily.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that team element is really unique. I mean, I can sort of relate to my early years. I played in a lot of bands. I was a music major, so I was used to working with ensembles. But then I found a challenge in sort of taking that ensemble to a kind of professional capacity, to where then I worked kind of on my own. And so as a business person, I found more success individually, but I missed the sort of camaraderie of like when you work with somebody and they do something you didn't expect and you're like, oh wow, or you kind of happen to both be on the same page creatively and you have that moment of, yeah, of sort of shared discovery, which is
that excitement.
Special. Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's hard to just excite yourself, yeah, you know, that to keep that sustained. So I would love to hear more about the game you're working on now. You know, that's something very topical to kind of the category of our podcast. And so I definitely want to spend a good amount of time hearing more about that. So can you kind of give the explanation, for those who may not be super familiar with what NFTs are, and how do people interact with your game? How do they play it?
Sure. Well, I'm going to start with the game side. Metropolis Origins is a collectible card game, somewhat on the model of Magic Gathering and Hearthstone, and used a lot of the game design principles from those. We have our own slightly different spin on it. It's a faster game. It's easier to pick up. It is a little more spatial. Where your cards are on the board matters to how they play and interact with other cards. So it sneakily has a little bit of that roguelike, yeah, or chess feel, which I feel like hybridizes very, very well with the card space and makes it feel new.
Oh yeah.
It's also an NFT game. The cards, you buy the cards as NFTs. You can collect them. We're at this very moment building a whole system whereby you can play to earn. You can craft the cards. You can meld them together. It's a new space for me. I came to it from immersive sim design. It's my first card game, although I found a lot of the game design principles carry over very well. Mm-hmm. But what we learned the moment we launched is that the NFT card game design space is actually quite, not totally different, but has a whole bunch of extra considerations and expectations from players. So we are all learning in real time, which is kind of great. Almost all the game design I've done work with has been on emerging technologies, and it's very interesting to see this this new one.
Right. Yeah. So that brings up kind of a point of design research, right? So Austin mentioned that like there's a certain expectation from the community of NFT collectible mm-hmm. card games that might be different from like a purely, you know, Magic the Gathering or Yu-Gi-Oh or something.
Yeah.
When you do a design, Christian, do you tend to like research similar titles? Like, let's say you're going to make an RTS. Would you play a bunch of RTS games, or do you go on instinct? Or
I actually prefer to know less about the genre I'm working for, so that way it feels more like a me thing and sure. what my ideas of the genre are, and then I will incorporate actual genre tropes into the project as I work on it, because like it's still fun finding out the problems on my own and then seeing how did this game solve that problem? And right. like, will that solution work for me, or do I need to look elsewhere?
Right. Now that makes sense. Yeah. You want to make sure your voice isn't accidentally influenced so heavily yep. that you lose your voice.
Yep.
That's very interesting. I think for somewhat similar question for you, Austin, but a slightly deviation of why an NFT card game versus just like, so like Magic the Gathering, like right now, if you can play a digital version of it and you can have a card and it's your card and you can trade it. So what inspired you guys to kind of focus on like blockchain and try this other new space?
To be honest, as far as I know, we wanted to stand up a game real quick, and we didn't want ourselves too tied to VC investors, and we thought, oh, this will be a quick, easy way to do it. And that was the first idea. And then after that, we had to like plunge into the NFT and crypto spaces and learn how those works. But I think actually we just kind of got sick of chasing money to sure. start our game, and see, mm-hmm. we were like, let's start it right now. Here's a way to do it.
Right.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, we've had some internal discussions about, you know, the sort of what would be the word, like morality? I don't know if morality is, feels heavy, but choosing to make NFTs and, mm-hmm. and is it the right choice? And I'm excited about it, and I think most of the team now is also on board. Mm-hmm. But I know there was some initial resistance, and we had to have a conversation about, okay, well, what is that resistance, and you know, why is it bad to do something that, you know, there are a lot of good examples of, like, sure, there's some silly things like, you know, like the Bored Apes, like, why is that picture worth so much money? But is it hurting anybody, or is it just sort of silly, and kind of diving into some of those pain points? And I imagine we'll have to do the same for consumers. Yep. So there's a niche of people that already like this stuff. But it's not, I wouldn't say there's mass appeal. Mm-hmm. Like if I go to, you know, my sister's friend or something, like, they're not going to know probably like, oh, I have these 5 NFTs. Maybe they heard about it.
Those would just be letters to them.
Right. So it's like you get this niche and you get people willing to spend a lot of money because they see the potential of value. Mm-hmm. But then I think there's a second phase of now there's just the not sort of monetary value, but just the sort of just inherent value of like, I like this game. I like that I have these cards as mine, and they're possessions, digital possessions of mine. You know, I have these contracts for mm-hmm. them. That can be exciting in itself. And I think that's the next phase of getting past just the investor mentality, which I think most of the NFT space is in right now. Okay, another question for you, Austin. So I actually, funny enough, just in another recent podcast, we chatted with Dave Shumway, who is at Magic League with you as well. He's a good friend of mine from way back when.
Super talented guy.
Yeah, super amazing. One of the kindest persons I've ever met. Good guy. When you were at Magic Leap, what was your experience like there? Do you have any like really special moments of discovery, like as you're doing some of that design, that you're like, oh, this works, or oh, that does not work?
There were a lot. I mean, it was such a new space. There were a lot of discoveries that we made. I mean, the moment when I felt like this is a new real thing is when, you know, I'm used to you're making a video game, you know, you're your editor, you compile your shit, you go to test it out, and you're like, okay, you're going to load a different file and I'm going to play on my laptop. The moment I realized that I, you know, compile stuff, I export it, and then I stand up and I walk into the middle of the room to test it, that felt so different. Your body's engaged. All the senses and parts of your brain that deal with a 3D space and the intuitive affordances of your body, it changes everything.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's so many differences. Early on, there was kind of a lot of panic because it's like, oh, we can't design a level. Like, we can't control the geometry. Mm. And you have to step back and think about that and realize that you absolutely are not, you're not designing the world. What you're doing is designing systems that interact with existing geometry. Right. I mean, yes, whatever. Okay. You can instantiate a screen or a board or whatever. But the paradigmatic example I take is like virtually a rubber ball, like a digital as a digital object. Right. Mm-hmm. Any room you're in, you can throw it against the wall. It'll bounce around. It'll do it differently depending on the shape of the room. And so what you end up wanting to do is design systems that will grab onto any different room you're in and play differently in every different room. And mm-hmm. suddenly you're leveraging all the complexity and variety of the real world, added to which you're allowing people to play the way they did for most of human history.
Right.
Like in the world with your body, with 3D space.
Right.
It is absolutely, absolutely different. And you take inspiration from, you know, from playground games, from mm-hmm. bar games, from parlor games. I could talk forever about this, but it is a fascinating, interesting new space.
Yeah. It almost makes me think of, you know, when we actually modeled our office recently for like arranging desks and for some marketing material. And I was really excited to like build a game in our office, like digitally. So we have this like duplicate. So like, let's build a game as this is a level. And it's like, well, with the Magic Leap or HoloLens, you could just do that. Like, you don't have to model the space. You're just already in here. And now you're fighting zombies in your office. And like, that could be kind of a fun idea. And I think you mentioning playground games makes a lot of sense because it feels very much like a kid experience of like, I'm in my bedroom and suddenly a monster comes out from under the bed. Like, that's cool, maybe scary, but that's cool. And that's a neat thing that, you know, you can do. And also made me think of, you mentioned your AR, your use of AR sort of spatial in your card game. And I thought that was really innovative. I haven't seen, you know, I've played Hearthstone. I used to play, you know, Magic growing up. And I don't recall, I want to say in Hearthstone, there was some like adjacency rules and things like that. But spatial is really interesting. Are you in your layout board, are you still in like rows, or how do you kind of work the spatial element?
I mean, the initial launch is just super simple. Like, mm-hmm. you have a row of six spaces, they have a row of six spaces. You know, every card is unique and every card reacts differently to its position on the board, what's positioned around it. There's like, I mean, we started super, super simple. Like, there's a lone wolf card. Right, it's powerful when it's by itself, but if you put a card next to it, it depowers a whole bunch, and suddenly you have a bunch of tactical considerations. Yeah, I want to put some all that cards on my board, but I need to leave, you know, those one or two spaces open to leave my lone wolf being powerful. And suddenly, that's the kind of moment when a simple card game starts taking off as posing, you know, fun tactical decision making in real time. And we added from there. What's across from it? You know, I can place stuff on my opponent's board and change things. And sometimes it's a trade-off.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That, you know, it'll empower some cards and depower other cards. And suddenly you have a lot of emergent you know, cool gameplay happening in your PvP.
Yeah, emergent gameplay is interesting. I know that was a really hot topic a number of years ago, and I still find it very fascinating that, you know, the idea that you design a game a certain way, but other types of gameplay emerges out of those systems. And a lot of that is similar to what Austin was saying, is like building systems allows for emergence, you know, and that's, I always find that fascinating, and I like to incorporate that in designs.
Did you say it was a topic a couple of years ago? Because I still feel it's core to what games are and what games are becoming. Did it go out of style?
I would say it became a talking point a few years ago, and then it stayed as a really large design influence for like the last 10 years.
Yeah. It was definitely like, hey, here's this thing concept, and then everyone, it was like the buzzword, right? And then now I think, as Christian said, I think, it's there as a tool that we all hopefully consider when we're designing and choose to what degree we want emergence. I'm going to put you on the spot, Christian. If we're about to do a game jam here at Dev House, we're going to have a game jam day. And so if, let's say the theme was games in the metaverse, like what kind of experience would you create to like define metaverse with a video game?
Is this just for a jam?
So it doesn't have to be some big picture. Like, what platform do you see you building it on?
Maybe something like an AR RTS kind of game. Mm-hmm. Just like spawning a bunch of entities onto the ground and then being able to control them and tell them like, hey, walk off that desk, or like light that paper on fire, and then build like maybe other environmental systems or like elements. So like, oh, you lit that on fire, so like I'm gonna make another group that can put that out,
right?
And then using tools like that to build opposing forces, and then your game loop would be would derive from like enemies coming in and like disrupting your environment.
Sure, I like that. And I start, as you described it, I'm picturing these little sort of like tabletop size,
almost like Pikmin. Niantic made that new Pikmin game for AR, and I haven't played it myself, but the ads for it are awesome.
Yeah.
I love the way it looks.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the idea too of like kind of tying it into like from just AR to sort of like a higher metaverse concept of like maybe some of your units can like, I know some of the early Red Alert games would have like, and probably other RTS games as well, would have like upgrades. So like your character could get more kills and then it would become stronger and get like more stars. And so you could almost have like these characters like be in your bedroom and just be like on your nightstand and you like interact with them. And then now they go into battle, but they're stronger because you've spent time with it and you've interacted with them.
Yeah. I've been really intrigued by like Tamagotchi kind of stuff recently.
Yes. Yeah.
With like that long-term relationship building with the player.
Yeah. Same question to you, Austin. If we were to say, hey, come up with a game that's, you know, you have a weekend to build, what would the framework be if the theme is metaverse?
Yeah, well, with metaverse stuff, I really try to break out of existing video game genres as much as possible. You know, the immediate thing I think of is a game that most people don't remember that was on your phone called Bounden, which was basically, it used the accelerometer of the phone to kind of lead you through a kind of choreographed dance that you had to cooperatively do with somebody else. And I really like that idea, getting people to walk around, getting people to move. Like, I mean, I can almost bound in and I can see building a game that was halfway between moving through a choreographed ballet, halfway to Twister. You know, I think it's finding out what happens when you get on your feet. Or what was that game that they did? Was it Johann Sebastian Joust?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. Yep.
that's such a great example of a metaverse game and a genre of game that has barely been touched, but is so rich.
Yep. Yeah. I remember every GDC, you know, you'd always see a bunch of people playing that upstairs in some of those halls. But yeah, for people who haven't seen that, it's a game where you would have the PlayStation Move controller, had the little like sphere colorful thing. Mm-hmm. It was, I guess, the response to Wii, I assume. I think if I remember the timeline right.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you would have this thing, and it's almost like a fragile egg. Like you can't move it too fast, it would trigger and you're out, but you're trying to hit other people. So it's like, hey, I want to knock knock you out. So I'm going to go hit yours. But if I move too fast, then I mess mine up. So it's an offense and defense game. It's super cool. But yeah, hardly explored.
The fact that they took the controller and ditched the screen.
Yes.
Was just a kind
I love
of
it.
Genius stroke.
Yeah, because you would see, because it has a light, so it can notify you of like, oh, you're out or you're moving too fast. So yeah, super cool. Well, I want to make sure we save time for our questions. So we have five questions we ask everybody. Me and Christian will sort of take turns. I think Eric wrote these and his handwriting's pretty enough that we can both read it. So first question for you, Austin, what is the metaverse?
Metaverse, I typically think of it as a planned system for surveillance on behalf of a kind of totalized late capitalist consumerist regime and or state security apparatus, if those can still be adequately differentiated.
That was the best answer yet.
I mean, that's so much of the reason why you see money pour into XR companies is because, you know, and why Facebook is pushing it, because the degree to which you broadcast personal information as you use an AR system, I mean, it is orders of magnitude past any you know social media system currently existing. So I think that drives investment in it more than anything else. I mean, you can add in Department of Defense stuff. So that's mainly how I think of the metaverse, is a coming dystopia.
With
some, you know, game applications that sort of
a fun dystopia
peripherally out of it.
it's a fun answer, because we you know, you get a lot of variations, and so I love, you know, the difference of opinions, and the sort of, you know, it brings up the point that there needs to be caution and how we, you know, responsibly handle this technology. Are you want to get that next one, Christian?
Yeah. What is the coolest tech you expect to see in the next 5 years?
Well, outside of the digital space, I would say wind-powered container ships. Have you seen the pictures of those things? They're awesome.
Yes, I actually have.
Within the digital space, augmented reality, accessibility tech. The things you can do for deaf and blind people and people who need help speaking are amazing. The moment I saw an AR, like American Sign Language interpreter, that could read hand positions and read them out to people who don't know ASL, it is a game changer for a lot of people, I think.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's great to be able to help people with technology and not just make entertainment. What tech do you expect to fail in the next 5 years or go down in popularity?
Right, or as opposed to tech, I hope will fail. I mean, leaving aside the internal combustion engine, I think we're probably going to see one more generation of failed head-mounted wearable AR stuff. I'm not sure what else I can predict. Obviously, VR is kind of on the bubble, right? Where it hasn't found its killer app, but it's so cool anyway. I feel like it will subsist in its niche, the way, say, you know, animation or the graphic novel has, and it will at some point find its place. I wish we had time to go more into VR storytelling and what's happening there.
But, we'll have to do another episode for it.
We'll have to do another episode.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I like the concept of maybe VR won't go away, but it might just become a permanent niche. You know, right now it is, but most people assume it's just because it hasn't hit the adoption, but it may potentially always be that, which isn't necessarily a bad thing.
It might already be at its plateau.
Right. And then other spaces will grow.
Okay. The next question, what is your favorite interactive experience?
Apart from voting in a democratic election, I'm a huge fan of Blendo Games, and Brendan
Chung
works out of LA. Brendan Chung is like a weirdly undersung genius. When I played 30 Flights of Loving, I just thought to myself, this just fell out of through a time warp of 30 years ahead.
Oh, yeah.
When people actually have understood what interactive narrative feels like. I have no idea why he's not more wildly popular, but that's the thing I always recommend to people. You know, and What are the others that you did? Gravity's Bone. Is that, am I thinking of the right thing? Anyway, everything that guy touches, basically, yeah, is so fantastic.
It's awesome. I love the indie game space.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I want to spend all of my time.
I was going to ask, have you been watching any of the Skin Deep video streams from Blink?
Oh, I have not. But they must be fascinating.
Oh, they're pretty fun to watch just to leave on during the evening.
The final question I have for you for our five question. Oh, wait, no, I lied. This is question four. What is your... no, that's right. We already asked you your favorite interactive experience. So final question. What interactive experience would you like to see? So something that's not out there yet, but you're like, man, I wish someone would make this.
Yeah, you know, there's a... I mean, I have a whole wish list of things that mixed reality will do at some point. I think a lot of the top choices are things like, I want an AR app that can really teach me to dance. It is so freaking embarrassing to learn social dance, like swing dance and waltzing on the rest of it. Like, I just want something that will teach me to do it in the privacy of my own home, so that by the time I go out, I already know how to do it. I mean, speaking more seriously, like, feel like it's an under talked about thing. Augmented reality apps that do things that will teach you things that allow you to connect to people off device, right? It's not all about when you're wearing the device or using the device. It can teach you things that you know, augment your life even when you're not sitting there looking at the screen. Something teach me to dance where no one can watch me. That is what I would love.
Well, I think that's a sort of a positive way to look at the metaverse, is that yes, there's technology. I mean, a lot of the definitions are kind of about the intersection of technology, digital, and reality. And most of the time that kind of comes in the flavor of overlays and you know, basically the visual connection. But I like the idea that you kind of propose that, well, maybe there's something digital that impacts my experience in the physical, but not at the same time. You know, I recently started using VR, like boxing games for fitness, and the one I normally use is more just fun. It's like Beat Saber, but I just started using Supernatural, and that one has like more instruction of like how to box and how to properly swing. And I found it like, oh, I didn't actually know how to do this, so I did learn something. Mm-hmm. So I found that pretty satisfying from a user experience.
It's both terrifying and wonderful that the formerly, you know, the glass wall has become permeable. Right. I hope it is more wonderful than terrifying.
Yes, yeah, we can hope. Yeah. So, well, Austin, you know, I appreciate your time coming on. We're going to have you back on and talk about some of the VR storytelling and some other cool things as we go. But if anyone wants to connect to you, ask you cool design questions, talk to you about your game, what's the best way to reach you?
Well, it's good to reach me on. Personally, I'm on Twitter. You know, Twitter Grossman Books. Which is a username I came up with to troll the rest of my family who also write. Grossman Books on Twitter or through my website personally. And then metropolis-origins.com is where you see QXR's new game. And it's fun already. And it's just beginning more, all the things we're going to add to it.
Well, yeah, we love, you know, we know a couple of folks on your team, and now of course we've had time to talk, and so, you know, we definitely believe in what you guys are doing and the talent on your team. So I think it'll be something really special, and appreciate the time and looking forward to connecting again soon.
Yeah,
thank you. This was lovely. Awesome. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Take care, Austin. So today's episode is sort of about design in the metaverse. Mm-hmm. I think Austin put it well. Oh, I wonder if people can hear our sirens. We're in downtown Dallas and there's a police and fire truck. But Austin kind of brought up the point that, you know, there's some risks and there's some things you have to consider. Yep. Like, okay, if I want to build an MR experience where it's using my space, well, how do I use that space? I can't design a corridor and a level because maybe you don't have a corridor in your house. Mm-hmm. What are your some closing thoughts on how people need to look at design for AR and VR and maybe the idea of this sort of like digital, not simultaneous, but a digital connection to the real world.
That actually really spoke to me was the like using AR to carry not just digital you forward, but the real existing real life you forward with like educational skills. That's personally my favorite part about the AR experience so far, is just how much you can learn from it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And we're working on like a historical app right now, which will be interesting. And it's located in a place where there's not a lot of information readily available to people. There's like some weird people handing out brochures on the corner kind of thing. So it's like, is that the source of truth you want? And how can, you know, maybe we can't get an expert down there because the city can't afford it or whatever the limitations are. But if you can have a piece of an app educate, and especially with AR, now you can use the space and talk about the space
and actually making it interactive.
Yeah, then it can compel people to actually use that instead of some random person pointing with their conspiracy brochure. So awesome. Well, I think, you know, design is going to be deviate into a ton of smaller subjects, and we're probably going to have many more design episodes. But this is a nice kind of like intro to metaverse design. And so, you know, obviously follow us. We're on Spotify. We are on Apple Podcasts. We are also on YouTube, which is always what we recommend because we have videos that we like to show. So until next time, we are DevHouse, and we'll see you then.